Hello and welcome to Side Dish, your podcast about Longmont, everything that you want to know and very little that you need to know. I am Brady Steffel, joined today by just...
Annie Larner.
Not just Annie Larner, but like just one person.
Just one.
Not the, to diminish the one person's presence.
We're going to hang out.
Just...
And we'll
so
see.
Yeah, so here we are today. There we go. Now I can hear myself in my ears, and it actually feels real. The audio balance was wrong.
We're really good at this.
We're not going to cut this out because that's how we roll. So yeah, no guests today. We have a couple. We have a live event coming up.
Yeah, we have an important announcement. I'm sure we've heard it, but we will be recording live.
Yep, for my dad's birthday.
December 20th?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, happy birthday, Brady's dad. Will he be in town? Can he come?
No. You can invite him.
Yeah.
I don't think he'll come.
Okay.
So, Pat, if you can hear me, come on by. I don't think he will.
Well, we're going to have it a little bit. So it's going to be again at Dryland Distillery, and we're going to have it a little bit later at 5:30 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
So we hope that you can head out of work and come get a little drinky drink afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe they'll have their eggnog. Again, because remember they did the eggnog contest last year?
Stuff's so good.
Oh, so good. So definitely come by. December 20th, it'll be fun and festive, and we'll do a live recording, and we'd love for y'all to be there.
We would, yeah. And if they don't have that, they have hot buttered rum. I was just there on Friday. Yeah, they have it back, and everybody's like, do you have the hot buttered rum? That's what their patrons sound like. That's why a lot, you know, people don't always think to go there, because it sounds like octogenarians.
I don't even know what that is.
I'm not entirely sure it was creamy as eggnog-ish, but it's not eggnog. It's not quite that dense.
It makes me think of butter beer from Harry Potter.
I think it's less big than that. It comes in a delightful little mug, little baby
nice.
Mug. It's super cute. So I had one of those, and I had a different one that I can't remember. It was good.
Okay.
I love their drinks. I think they make the best drinks anywhere in town that I've ever had. So.
Well, what we're going to do today is we're going to just talk about a little bit of buzz around town. And then we were thinking, since the Lou Cardenas building at 9th and Main is coming along and looking really good, we've got facade up, there's a sign up, it's really starting to come together. We wanted to pull up out of the archives our interview with Jennifer Peterson, who's the developer there, and the family members of Lou Cardenas, who gave us a little bit of insight into that project, like, I don't know, over a year ago. And so we just wanted to refresh everyone's memory about what the inspiration and cool story was behind that building now that's kind of coming together. So we'll pull that one out of the archives. And you know who you're going to hear?
A voice from Christmas past.
Exactly. You're going to hear.
Rewind that one. A voice from Side Dish past. Eric Ozempa will be on the air very briefly.
That's right.
And we'll see how far we've come. Because Annie was saying the recording quality wasn't as good as it is now. And we've made some improvements. And we're happy about that. And I think it was like still COVID days at the time. Or
totally.
Shortly after. So there's some of that stuff.
That's right.
But I think a little bit too, I've toned it down with how much I'm just blasting over everybody all the time.
It was really hard over Zoom.
Yeah, it was really hard over Zoom.
So anyway, that's exciting. What else you got around town?
So yeah, we did the live event, and then what else is going on? Oh, the big thing, I think the big one that I had a lot of fun with is I went to the Urban Mill, what's it called? Urban Forest Mill in town.
Yeah. So what is this?
There's a place by the Ken Pratt Bridge. Underneath there where the Climbing Collective used to be.
Do you mean the Pratt Parkway Bridge?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, it's the Pratt Bridge. It's
well,
the
just
big one.
Drop the Ken.
Yeah. The big Pratt Parkway Bridge, mm-hmm, I believe is what it is. So that's there, and it's pretty cool. You go, it's a bit tricky to get in and out of. So I went in, my brother wanted to go in because we both do a little bit of woodworking and we'd never been and her recognized. So like word of mouth sent us and we went in and it was like, oh my God, this place is so cool. So we go in and it's just like a warehouse that nobody was there and there's a bunch of noise and like, we're just like looking at slabs of wood. And eventually he comes out and I think his name is Tom Graber. If I got it, I think it's Tom Graber.
Mm-hmm.
Pops out of the woodwork. You'd think I got one.
No.
Push another button.
I wish.
Keep going. Push.
No. A button.
No. The crickets were better.
Those the joke.
Yeah. I mean, play the joke out. You know, it's like it was a bad joke. Okay, out of the woodwork. There we go. So Tom pops out and he is like the friendliest guy in the world. And he's explaining everything about how it works. And this, as an aside, probably to an aside, he's like, oh, hey, like, because my parents are here and my brothers are like, oh, hey, New Ulm, you get New Ulm hat or something somebody's wearing. He's like, yeah. And it's like, yeah, we're from there. And he's like, what? Because that's what Tom sounds like. I'm sorry, Tom. That's the worst impression I've ever done in a series of bad impressions. And he used to live in New Ulm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like 10, 15, 20 years ago, whatever it was, he used to live in New Ulm for a number. It's like, and then my dad's like, oh, here. And then, you know this guy? Yeah, I know that guy. So that was weird, but very cool. And then basically he talked us through the business model, and I'll explain kind of what's down there after that. But the business model is the city manages about 300,000 trees. And these trees get sick, they die. I mean, ash is on the way out. A while back, a bunch of walnut was pulled out, but whatever. Eventually, trees need to be felled within the city limits. And Tom gets some of the goodies, and he, instead of having the city take them away and basically chip them down into nothing, he takes them and turns them into some pretty glorious pieces of wood. And then the extras from there, when he has, because he has leftovers too, it's not a perfect thing. They actually go to like local mushroom growers and they grow mushrooms using
them. Wow.
So pretty cool model. That piece of it was really neat. So he said, you know, it's really zero waste and it's, you know, like use all these resources. And I helped the city by taking some stuff off of their hands and went in there. And there are some slabs that are massive. And I'm sitting there with my jaw on the ground and my parents are like, what's wrong with our son? Because I'm like trying to put myself back together going like, it's like a 15-foot slab. This is insane. You know, it's like $3,000-$4,000 or $2,000-$3,000 or whatever it was. But so they'll pull, the city cuts walnut. There's not a lot left, he said, because there was some walnut blight. I can't remember the name of it.
Oh, wow.
That came through.
Why? Because walnut's not good for?
No, it's, I mean, walnut only lives, trees only live so long. But some, he's called like thousand something. There's some like, you know, these are emerald ash borer and there's Dutch elm disease. There's a thing like that that happened to walnut in recent memory. So he said there's not a lot of walnuts left. So we do get a few. And so there's some of those and those, that's such a beautiful wood. But they cut it and then he's got a, so they mill it, he said, on the other side of town and they bring it there and he's got these huge kilns. And I mean, it's like a city bus, you know, he's got two of these things and there's like big rollers and but, so he feeds it into these machines and then the machine like heats the water out of it. And he gets like, oh, what do you got in there? And he's like, oh, it was this, you know, this beautiful cottonwood. I can't remember what it was. It was a beautiful cottonwood tree that came down on this street. And it's like, okay. And so he was like, yeah, we're still pulling 5 gallons of water out of this thing a day. And I'm like, wow, it's a lot. It's like, well, it used to be more.
Out of the tree?
Out of the tree. Yeah. Oh, wow. So he's got, you know, all these pieces of wood. And when you think about it, that makes sense. It's a massive piece of wood.
Of course, would never occur to me.
Right. Yeah. I'm going, 5 gallons of water a day. Wow. Yeah. So he's pulling this water out. I said, yeah. So at that rate, you know, it's still got, what do you say, 2 weeks or a month left or something. And then they pull it out and they've got these glorious, huge slabs of wood. But he said, you know, you look through and he's got elm and I think there was some oak and something called slippery elm, which was really attractive. Cottonwoods, like a hybridized cottonwood, walnut, and you know some other ones like what you'd see. There's olives and stuff, Russian olives and stuff, and the big Siberian elm trees there too with the massive slabs. I mean, they're like
those 4 feet
wide or more, you know. And so you get these huge slabs that just a monolithic piece of wood, and you can use them to make. So I'm going like I could make a table, I could make a like a, and I'm like going my main floor footprints like 1,000 square feet optimistically going like I don't know what to do with any of this, but it was really cool and it's a really cool model. And
so is that you can just go in like as a showroom?
Yeah, you just walk right in, and he may or may not come out because he was in the back running one of the kilns or something. He was checking on his numbers or whatever. So then in the back also he's got some of the surface finishing stuff. So he's got a joiner planer, like a massive, and he said his sanding, I can't remember which of the units it was, but he said it's 54 inches across. You can run a 54 inch piece of material through, which is huge.
Well,
cause you know, 4 feet's 48. So 54 is five or more
equipment. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's bonkers huge. Really, really cool. And then he said too, cause I'm going like, okay, well, like, how would I ever finish this? Like, if I got a piece of wood this big, it's never dead flat when you're done doing your thing. So he's like, yeah, you can bring it. If you buy some here, I'll refinish it for you. So you can run it through the sander again. It's like,
cool.
Really? So if you're a woodworker and you're looking for wood, or you're looking to finish, like to run something through to get it nice and smooth on a gigantic piece, he charges by the hour, and it's not cheap to run these things. So it's not, you know, it's hardly free to get some of that stuff done, but he's got that there too.
Do you know the address?
It's back there. It's where the Climbing Collective used to be.
Okay, it looks like 33 South Pratt Parkway.
Yeah, Suite 100.
Nice.
And yeah, you just go in and check it out. And if you know somebody who does that kind of thing and you want something built, he said, like, the people that like make it in woodworking more often than not are the people that buy huge slabs and make tables and stuff. So if you know or want something like that, you could go into. He's got a head full of contacts. The guy is pretty cool. So he probably knows somebody that could set you up. So if you're in the market for something like that, you got more money than sense, as much money as sense or whatever. They're beautiful tables, but they are, they are expensive.
Sure.
Cause the piece of wood alone can be, you know, $2,000-$4,000,
right?
$5,000, depending on what you get. So that was cool. That was one of the highlights of my week. I'm no joke. I wrote.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks. I've never heard of that place. How cool. I've got some woodworking friends. I'll definitely pass that on to you. Bearded Brewer opened.
Yeah.
So this is the new brewery.
The new beard themed brewery.
Another one at 1425 South Airport Road. So this is the corner of Airport and Clover Basin out there. We've been waiting forever for this place to open up. They are out of, I think, Omaha. And this is their second place in here in Longmont. And I think the story was that the guy who started this in Omaha and opened it in Longmont is a buddy of Brandon Knudsen, however you say that, who is the founder of Ziggy's.
Oh.
And so I don't know if he had some material involvement or what, but I think there was some, you know, relation. It was like, hey, let's open a brewery out there. It's cool out here. Come here.
Yeah, I launched
Ziggy's.
Get
so
anyway, there.
Yeah, so I heard it's pretty good. And they've got a bunch of brews on tap there. So some of them, let's see, they've got some like blonde, just kind of everything. Ale, a lager Helles. They've got some New England IPAs, West Coast IPAs. Some fruited stuff, some dark stuff. So I haven't been yet, but I'm definitely gonna head out because they have quite a few beers on tap there. And I don't think they have like a lot of food. I think it's mainly just beer.
Just beer.
I thought it was like a brew pub, like a full service restaurant situation, but it's just mainly beer.
Yeah, you'd think in that spot you would have food.
I know. Yeah, so I was a little surprised to hear that. In some not so dry news, we've got FEMA maps being updated. And I just wanted to share this.
Okay.
This is boring news, but it's actually kind of interesting.
Now we'll make it interesting.
So they have these things called the Colorado Hazard Mapping Program, CHAMP. There's a lot of acronyms in here, right? CHAMP are the maps for like floodplains in Colorado, like on the main waterways. And they have, so with all of the mitigation that's been going on since the flood, now a lot of places are out of floodplains and they're in maybe a floodway or like less hazardous places, which is significant for properties because of the insurance that you have to carry. So,
and also like your house may stay there the next time it rains.
For in all the like non-actual flood situations, it just sucks because it's really expensive to carry all the insurance. But anyway, so and Longmont has done some huge work along the St. Vrain River, and I think the work's been done, and it's just been a matter of waiting for these maps to be updated, which takes forever, and your insurance doesn't like kick in until it's actually formally updated. So it's like a matter of like a year, honestly, that they update it. But they're finally going to release these new maps. And there's a meeting that you can attend if you want to learn more.
Longmont Side Edge for your events updates.
I'm like, can I attend it virtually? Because I think I might. I'm going to. It's December 13th from 6 to 7 p.m. And it's a virtual meeting, it looks like. And you can find information about that in the Longmont Leader.
Oh, boy. And here I thought the meeting about prairie dogs was going to be the social event of the season.
I was pretty excited when I saw this article. I've been waiting for this one.
Were you?
Oh, literally. I've been like, when are these FEMA maps? I told you a few weeks ago, I went deep on FEMA maps one afternoon because I was trying to figure out what was going on with this. So this was big news for me.
You are so much less interesting than I thought you were.
Fine. What do you got?
I don't know, man. After the, how could I follow? Right? We talked about pickleball last time, right? Where pickleball, there's a pickleball, new thing, pickleball.
I don't think so.
Yeah, what's there's up? A pickleball. I got to find it now.
A new pickleball, like what facility?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Opening in Longmont?
Yeah.
Como? Where?
Let me see if I can actually find the thing. I thought there was something open by third. Okay. So yeah, this is it. Third shot. Yeah, it is. Okay. So I was going to say Oscar Blues founder gets in the pickleball game. I believe we didn't mention that. Maybe this came up after with third shot opening in Longmont November 18th. So
where?
This is, yeah.
I have to know
food. There'll be a permanent food truck. We're looking. I thought we talked about this.
No.
Yeah. The 18th, operated by the Meadow Creek Tennis and Fitness Club. We made it, edit some stuff out. You got anything to talk about while I'm trying to figure out? Oh, there it is. 20 South Bowen Street will be managed by Robert Leonard, while Ireland will manage the Wheat Ridge joint at 3545. So there must be a couple that they're renting, but I didn't really read this.
So this is, yeah, this is down. Oh.
20 South Bowen. So South Bowen would be south of Ken Pratt Boulevard. Which is always weird. Back when we moved, because we have, you know, we're not on Bowen, but we live in a street like that. And then, like, we had something being delivered once. They're like, where's your house? There's
I see. It's in this building where Canned Aid is and stuff.
Okay.
Okay, so yeah, that makes sense, because that's all Oscar Blues stuff. Wow. Okay. Pickleball. Finally.
No. Yeah, I guess. I don't really get it, but it's been super popular.
I think what is hard, this building. We recently stopped by this building when it was hailing on our way
home.
You
are so good at radio.
And we...
this building.
Well, it's...
Yeah, we were there. Like, what? Can you give us a little more
it's
insight?
It's down in the industrial zone as you're going down the hill from 2nd Avenue down to Price Road that nobody ever calls Price Road because it's just that road that leads to, you know, Left Hand Brewing, really. Anyway, so down that road, there's a bunch of industrial buildings. Bowen Street Garage, that's one of my favorite little mechanic shops.
Oh, down there. Yeah,
kind of across from there is this pretty nice building, and I actually didn't know the Candade was in there until this very moment.
Yeah, Bowen Street's on Bowen, and then, okay, so it's there, so it'd be close to the left-hand brewery.
Kind like of, area, but not quite to Price.
Not on the same street, but close enough.
But approaching it, and
if you were European, you'd just walk.
Right. Interesting. Cool. Well, yeah, I think the main thing about pickleball is just trying to go somewhere indoors. Oh, speaking of that, I went to the local drive this week, finally. I got good things to say about that.
Say them.
So I think I mentioned before that it's kind of a vibe. I had gone to like some opening where they had drinks and stuff. So it's awesome because they have a full bar with really good cocktails. Mm-hmm. And there's only 3 simulator bays, right? Okay, so
talk us through what it actually is. Yeah.
The local drive is down there at like the 200 block of Emory behind South Main Station Apartments there in that DOG building where Keller Williams is going. And there's the axe throwing as well. And then they're on the other end of it.
How also does axe throw?
The local drive, yeah. And they have 3 golf simulator bays and then like a full bar. And so you can go in there and they also have like pool and some like video games. And it's a vibe. Like I like that it's not 100% focused on the bays. Like you could go in there and have a drink without playing golf at all or just hang out with friends do. I went and played with a friend and our other friend came who doesn't golf at all and just hung out on the chairs and had drinks and hung out with us. And it's so cool. I thought it would be kind of cheesy, but we played 9 holes in 45 minutes, I think, or maybe a little bit more than that. And you could play these different, like, I think we played St. Andrew's Old Course or whatever. And so you get a lot of swings in. It's like $60, I think, for the simulator bay for the hour. But if you go with one other person, you swing a lot. So $30 between the two of you, and you can get a $5 margarita.
So you're like measuring it by swings. So like if you have a sparring partner or, you know, a playground or whatever, like this is the same metric.
Well, sort of, but like if you did it with 4 people, it would cost less. It's 60 divided by 4,
right?
But you don't swing as much.
Sure. So it sounds fun. Honestly,
It was super fun. Like I will totally go back.
Do you golf?
Yeah.
So you know actually how to hold a club and do the whole golfing thing?
Yeah, I make no promises about the quality of my contact with the ball, but I get out there.
Yeah, I don't. And if I didn't and I wanted to use this bay, would it be forgiving enough that I could go?
Absolutely. That was what was cool about it. I could tell the people who were in there, like, and I guess winter's their big season because they got these golfers during the offseason who want to come play. So they were kind of like some hardcore.
I can't find my ball in the snow.
I know. That's what's so cool. You go in the rough, you don't have to chase your ball, and you just immediately get to go play again. So you get to play quite a bit of golf, and it's totally like low key. If you went in and you didn't know how to swing a ball at all, no problem. If you go in, you're kind of serious. That thing. Anyway, highly recommend. It was so much fun. Next, like, you want to do like a party, like social event thing with friends. It was so much fun.
And it's like, I wish I had thought about this while my parents were, because I remember talking about it the last time you did a show, and I was like, oh, that'll be neat. But I wish I'd remembered, because my dad he's always played a lot of golf.
Yeah.
And he's retired now and still plays a lot of golf. It would have been fun to have him down there, because like a lot of times when you do activities, it's like, my brother and I are really good. Right. He's like, I'm not doing that. Because you guys are good. I'm El Stinko. And like, I'm not going to be humiliated by my grown children. I don't know what he's actually thinking, but sometimes he's a party pooper. But if you had golf, you'd be like, okay, come and show us how it's done.
Right.
Golf and pinball, right? Those are his jams. So that would have been fun. I would have done that.
Do it again.
Yeah. Next time they come out, I'm going to have to write a note, like put something in my calendar for, like, I think they're coming out in Easter, like, Brady, make a reservation or go to at least, Wednesday at 1 o'clock. Go
play. Exactly.
That would be fun. I think I would try that, actually. Yeah, it sounds fun.
So one more bit of news here. It's not really news, but I just want to call out so there's been some talk about this bond issue that's going to be coming up in 2024 with the school district.
Okay.
And this is going to be on the ballot, and they're going to be asking for a bond to build some stuff. The main thing is 3 new schools. And it's there's going to be probably a lot of news about this coming, moving forward. But I just wanted to call it out. And they're all, interestingly, out in sort of Carbon Valley, Erie, and Meade. So all outside of Longmont, because that's where all of the enrollment growth is right now.
Which super tracks, given how expensive it is to live in Longmont. If you want to have a family and have a house big enough to accommodate, like a modern... There's a guy on my street, small house, has 5 kids. You can make it work, and people have made it work in the past. Modern living, not so much, usually. Yeah. So, I could see why that's cheaper.
Yeah, I mean, it's exploding out there. Those are the areas. Yeah. And it's just interesting. I went to this interesting meeting where, I think the superintendent gets a lot of questions sometimes about why the school district covers both Longmont, right, and then also Erie, Meade, and Carbon Valley, and like how it's a little... you could argue unfair in some ways that all of these tax dollars, like all of Longmont residents are taxed for all this growth and enrollment and demand outside of Longmont. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, in Longmont, enrollment is decreasing in a lot of the schools, actually. They struggle for enrollment, so they struggle for funding or whatever. And they actually don't struggle as much the way that our funding with our district is super clever, and it's pretty, equitable from school to school. But, you could look at it that way, but you could also say it's kind of lucky that the Longmont schools have the growth and all this demand outside of Longmont funding the rest of Longmont, because our school district gets money from the state for enrollment. And so if we weren't growing our numbers in all of these areas, it would be harder for Longmont. In fact, the people out in like Carbon Valley and Erie and Meade could argue that we're the freeloaders, or the people in Longmont are more the freeloaders, if you will. But it all just like shakes out, and we just have a really big school district, and we're one of the fastest growing school districts in the state, I think. So these schools are super, super needed, and the bond is, we're like so healthy financially in St. Vrain. And I think the big thing that they're going to be emphasizing is that it wouldn't result in like any new mill levy, because the bond will stay under the dollar amount that like would require that to bump up property taxes. So the demand is totally there, and they were really good about paying off the bond that they did last time early, which allows them to come after this money. It's all these like rules about how bonds work and stuff. So something to keep an eye on over the next year. I know it's gonna be really important for the district.
Yeah, I'm always a big proponent of investing in, like infrastructure, social infrastructure.
Yeah,
this is probably obvious by now. But yeah, I think like investing in education is very important. And I'm not surprised that we're one of the fastest growing.
Yeah, and it's all because of Weld. It's not because of Boulder County. Like that's not where the growth is. It's all in Weld County.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, also not surprising.
And Weld County is one of the only like positive birth rate or positive growth rates in population growth rates in the state, actually.
In news right that now. Continues
just
to not
like
be
making
very surprising.
More babies than old people are dying, basically.
Hmm. What a fun way to put it.
Well, it's demographics.
That's what's happening.
Demographers don't
We
mind.
All die. It stinks.
Yeah.
It's the way it works. I do have this. I found this. Boulder County helps residents buy Mountain View Mobile Home Park. Have you heard about this?
Wait, say it again.
Boulder County helps residents to buy Mountain View Mobile Home Park.
Interesting.
Okay, so I'm trying to get this right. I was skimming it again. The Boulder County, this is from Daily Camera. Boulder County Commissioners this week agreed to provide a $1.1 million forgivable loan to help residents buy Lafayette's Mountain View Mobile Home Park. And I thought with Mountain View, it was actually in the city, but it's not. It's in the county. And it's a 5.86-acre community with 34 units on the east, so Cleveland and Burlington. I don't know where any of this stuff says. So it doesn't matter. To me, anyway, maybe you guys know. It's fine. It's kind of an interesting thing. Mobile homes are a strange...
I mean, I don't understand even how that would work. It's phenomenon. Such a weird real estate thing because
yeah, so there's no title. They formed a co-op.
Okay.
Because I think somebody owns the land and then you lease out the land per month. And that's where most of the expenses, I think, from owning a mobile home come from. And it can be actually fairly predatory because if you're there and you're living there, they can increase the rents per unit. And you don't have a lot of recourse because it's still the cheapest place that you go. So you wind up kind of...
I mean, it depends on the agreement. And the other side of that is that tenants who don't pay their rent can move their home overnight.
Sure, it's but on it wheels. Is exceptionally expensive to live around here. And yeah, so no, totally. They have... they built a co-op and they're going to buy the property coming from grants and low interest loans and that sort of thing. And so the Lafayette City Council agreed to provide an interest-free $500,000 basically loan to the La Luna Community Cooperative toward the purchase. So I think, yeah, they get to keep because, you know, the owners were going to sell it. And I don't know what would have happened. You know, they're hinting in here at if it would have been demoed or if they would have just said you don't get to... but they'll get band together basically and co-op to like own
that is
and
so
operate.
Interesting. That would be a story to follow.
Yeah, just, I think that's
interesting real estate case study. About
it's a really cool, you know, and then if you own part of that community, then you're more invested. And I think it is. Yeah, it's a pretty cool case study.
Nice.
So if you want to know the actual details, there's more to be had. Check the Daily Camera. But it's just pretty cool. I think it's kind of a neat thing. Because like we all have to live somewhere and it's got so expensive here that a lot of people are like, well, I guess I'll rent until I die. And it's kind of the way a lot of that's going. So that's happening. I thought that was pretty interesting.
All right. Well, you got anything else? Should we got anything else?
In case you didn't know, Longmont publishes the plowing maps that they have, the roads that they plow.
That's a good one.
Did you know this?
That's on par with the early trash on Thanksgiving week.
Right. That's good. And I looked at it, I'm like, I didn't know they had it.
That is actually really cool.
They do. That's Snow Roots, City of Longmont. And it's like, I looked at it briefly, you know, because it's like, it's a snow plow map, but it's going to be like what you'd expect.
Yeah. It's just like the main roads.
Is it a road that you like live on?
Yeah.
Then it's probably not getting plowed. Is it a big one that people actually have to use?
This is like the one out of like 1,000 times a year, I'm like, it's awesome to live on a busy street.
Yes.
It's like the first street plowed and it's the big ones.
I've like slid sideways into the curb, you know, like, and just like, oh, where's the curb? I was backing up outside of the Longmont community or Longmont Public Media building and like, where is it? I got the backup camera and it just kind of smooshes sideways. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know which the curb. And I try to be a nice, respectful parker, you know, like usually I take my cart back. They say that that's like the thing. If you want to test somebody's social responsibility, and it's like, sometimes it's like, there's just like a thing where if you don't have the cart corral, like it's kind of like, there's a point where nobody's going to take it back.
Right.
You know, like at some point you're out in the sticks. There's a threshold in there and everybody goes like, oh, I do it. It's binary. I put it back. I don't think it's binary. I think there's sort of a, you know, I got cut off in traffic today and I'm in a bad mood and they should have a cart corral here because that would just be the thing. If they want to save the effort, there's going to be a thing, you know, nobody's above it. Design things well, it'll be better. You got anything else you want to talk about? Anything else? Did we talk about anything?
I want to talk about Lou Cardenas. Let's hear what Jennifer Peterson and our old pal and founder, Eric Kozempa, have to say.
Hey, how's it going? Drop a line.
We've got some really great people to talk to about a development that's going on at 9th and Main. Brady has given me weird signals, so I don't know what he wants me to do, but you know,
I'm just thinking, anyway,
so 9th and Main, there is a development that I live just a few blocks away from. And for me, that's a pretty exciting, not only is development an exciting part of what's going on in Longmont, but also just the family that they're honoring and the legacy of Lou Cardenas. Is really cool. So Jennifer Peterson is here. And Jennifer, thank you so much. And family members of Lou's that are here as well. And so we're ever so grateful for them to be with us. And Jennifer, can you tell us a little bit about the project itself?
Thank you for having us on your podcast. This is quite an honor. So the project is, it's just a dream that kind of came to me a couple of years ago. I had entered the world of commercial real estate development, and was looking for a project. And I am a longtime resident of Longmont, and I also live in the neighborhood of Casa Lou Cardenas, the future Casa Lou Cardenas. And so I'd been driving by the corner of 9th and Main for almost 3 decades and saying how ugly it was and how it was such an eyesore. So when I was looking for a project, that building on the corner happened to be for sale. And I thought, you know, maybe it's time to take some ownership and instead of griping about something that needs changing, just taking action and changing it. So that building, the price had been reduced. They'd had 2 or 3 contracts fall through. It was just time. It was just waiting for me. I was the last one standing. I got to working with a great realtor who convinced the property owner just to the north to sell me his building as well, because I needed both of those buildings in order to have enough space to do anything with. And got a wonderful architect, Tom Moore, involved. And we just started dreaming about a 3-story mixed use building for that corner.
Yeah. And there's already been progress made already. So looks like the old building that was an eyesore has been totally demolished and gone.
That was a fun day.
Yeah. We did it so fast. It was crazy.
Yeah.
We drove by and Kelsey was like, that was the biblioteca. That was the
it was just they're not all of a sudden.
And for those who remember Cheaper Charlie's, I remember Cheaper Charlie's back in the day, and that was quite the auto parts store back there in the corner at one time. I want to get to Lou and her legacy as well. And I hope that the family members, Michael, Lydia, Julian, Rose, I wonder if you could share a story about Lou and her involvement in Longmont, or what is a really great memory of Lou that you want to share with us?
Well, I think she probably had a dream too of wanting to get people involved in some of the issues that were in Longmont, such as the senior center. She wanted to get the Hispanic people to attend the seniors and to be a part of it, so that they, would feel, if she got a group, she wanted them to feel welcome there. Because they were always a little hesitant about getting involved in different projects, you know, and they just didn't feel, real welcomed. And so my mom tried really hard to do that. And so she got that started and going, and she got people to go, and that made her happy. And then the other thing was that she had wanted to have the transportation.
Oh, RTD.
She wanted to get that going because a lot of these people didn't have a way to get around or to, do things. And so because of their disabilities. And so she tried really hard and worked with city council and got that to happen after, several meetings that she went to and a lot of information that she gave them. I don't know if anybody else wants to add anything. Lydia, do you want to add anything to Mom's legacy? Lydia?
Well, the thing is with her is, like she was saying, she really wanted the people to feel comfortable going to the senior center, because I believe that when she started going there, she didn't feel that comfortable, although she... would go anyway. It was like her pushing herself through and getting them to finally welcome her. And so when she did that, she wanted to get the rest of the people to come in and feel the same way. And that was what she really worked for, is having people come there to get their blood pressures taken, because that happened maybe like once a week, and different things like that. And also to do the arts and crafts. They also had like a day or so every week or so to go to come to Denver to different things to see. And she got a lot of those things started for the Hispanic people to come. And not only the Hispanic, but the low-income people, but mostly the Hispanics. And because the other low-income people were not so hesitant about going there.
So Lydia and Rose, I have to ask you, I mean, I have read a little bit about Lou, and I did have the pleasure of meeting her back many years ago. But I just wanted to ask you, where did she get her courage? Because I was just so amazed. I mean, it takes a lot of courage for somebody who is maybe different looking, different in appearance, or different in abilities to actually cross that threshold, to go to the senior center and say, hey, I want to be involved. And there, at the time she did that, there were very few Hispanics probably involved in the senior center. Like, where did she get her courage?
Well, she was the oldest one of her family, and I think she had a lot of responsibility. And I think because she had that responsibility, it just gave her confidence, you know, and she was always real forward about, you know, doing and getting things done. You know, even with us, you know, we had to make sure that we got things done. She taught us responsibility. And I think that's, you know, she just, and then my dad wasn't very outspoken. And so she kind of, you know, took care of the whole family. She was the leader of the family.
So Jennifer, I want to turn to you real quickly. Why did you decide to name the project or the building after Lou? Like, how did that come to be, and why did you decide to do that?
Well, I love to create beautiful places that build community, beautiful physical spaces that build community. And so that was my main vision and main goal for this property. And as I got to moving along in the project, I thought, you know, I want to honor a woman who's been significant to the history, cultural development, economic development of Longmont, because there's not a lot named after women. And I was doing research with Eric Mason over at the museum, and I just was not finding the woman that was really, you know, singing to my heart. And I got to thinking about the Hispanic community, and I have three children, two graduates from Skyline High School and a third one who will graduate in a couple of years. And so I've just always been immersed in the Latino community, at least through the schools, and been comfortable in that. And I thought, you know what? The other group of people who haven't been recognized enough is the Hispanics and their efforts to grow Longmont economically and culturally, and in the past and in the present. And so I thought, I'm going to narrow my search. So really, it was through Eric Mason at the Longmont Museum. He said, you know, there's a woman named Lou Cardenas who just was very instrumental in so many ways. And what I love about Lou is that she was really altering the landscape of the city of Longmont, because she was pushing for diversity and equity and inclusion at a time where those topics were not at the forefront of conversation. So she really sort of, I mean, it was obviously necessary and needed to be done, but she was sort of ahead of the game in terms of really being willing to step out. And so I feel like that this is, I want to continue her legacy in this building. So it's a place to honor her, salute her, but it's also a place to bring, groups, different ethnicities together, and to just sort of help people expand their social circles. So we're marketing to Hispanic, business owners and, residents. And we're just really wanting that to be a place of multi-ethnicity. It's so easy. And it's normal for us to, as human beings, to just be attracted to people who are like us, and to make our social circles full of people who are like us. And if that's all we do, and we're not deliberate about expanding our social circles, then I feel like that we miss out on the opportunity to enjoy learning about and building relationships with people who are different. And in that, you often find wonderful similarities, and you find friendship, you know, beyond the circles that you thought you might. So that's what I'm trying to promote in this build.
Jennifer, is it unusual to kind of come up with a naming for a building like you did? I just think that, I'm sorry, this is my naivete. I just think developers go, oh, okay, who's a historical figure?
It's just a lot like, it's Garden Hills and
it's exactly.
Blue Meadows and it's the Mountain Vista.
Roosevelt Park Place was named after Roosevelt.
Exactly. But is that unusual? And maybe Annie wants to comment on this too. It seems like you went kind of above and beyond what generally property people do.
You know, I'm new enough in this realm that I would say just from observations of other property developments, like you're talking about, I don't see it. I don't see the developments being named after people. But you know, that it's just something I wanted to do. And I guess it didn't bother me that it's not a common thing to do.
Exactly. So what was the reaction then, Lydia Rose? What was the reaction from Jennifer, or from you, I should say, when Jennifer proposed naming it after Lou?
When she called me and she finally found me, she told me what she was doing, and I'm telling you, she got me off balance. I was so shocked and surprised and so happy that I just started crying, and I said, "You're kidding." She says, "No, I'm not." And I just feel so proud of my mom. And I'm just sorry that she's not here to see what everybody's doing, but hopefully she's watching from up above and she can see that we're so proud of her as her children and the community of Longmont, because I've talked to people and they've said, "What's going on? What is Lou doing?" And this and that. And I'm saying, "Well, this fine person named Jennifer, she found my mom at the library and she decided to do this for her." And like I say, we are so honored. My mother came to Longmont she came to the area when she was quite young. They came to do sugar beets from New Mexico. Her father would bring her. My mother was an orphan. Her mother left her and two brothers. So she was left with just her father. And so then he came to Colorado and he had my mother live with two different families, and they were my grandfather's brothers. One was lived in Fort Lupton and the other one lived in Frederick. And so between the two families, my mother lived, and then my grandfather would take her out to the field and do sugar beets. And I think once in a while, he would take her back to New Mexico with him and then come back until my grandfather remarried. And then he took her with his new wife, and they had children. And so she has a lot of step brothers and sisters who adored her.
My mom was a very hard worker. And I think, you know, that all stems from the way she grew up, you know, and that she just worked hard at everything and anything, even in the home. She was quite a domestic person in the home, and she just believed in teaching us all how to work and how to be responsible and dedicated to jobs, you know. And she was amazing as far as what she learned, and she learned by herself because she didn't have much schooling. And I mean, she sewed and did crochet and quilting and canning. She raised a few animals where we lived, and she preserved all this, anything that she could to, so we could make it in the wintertime, because they didn't work that much in the wintertime. But she was a very creative person, and I just admired her, everything that I learned from her. And, you know, you don't notice those things until after you grow up. how much you learn from them, you know, and you just start to break it down and you think, my God, I learned all these skills from her that was amazing, you know, that she picked up on her own and learned, you know. And I feel very honored myself and so proud of my mom that she did so much work. And before all of this, she worked so hard in the fields and under terrible conditions sometimes. And she would come home and she would be so tired. And of course, we all pitched in and helped. Lydia would cook and I would clean. And so we all pitched in and helped when she worked out in the fields and was very tired. So, and we all had chores to do, by all means, you know.
As far as the practicalities, kind of the nuts and bolts, like how many units are you talking about and how much square footage for retail? And
sure. So the first floor will be the retail or commercial spaces, and it's about just under 4,000 square feet total. It's an L shape on the corner. And those units can be divided into three spaces, four spaces, even five spaces. That'll be determined by the tenants we find and how much square footage they'd like. There's plenty of doors and windows on both sides of the building. So there's a lot of versatility in how those spaces can be built out, how the tenants can finish those for themselves, where they can place bathrooms, that sort of thing. Then the second and third floors are on the second floor, there's a small office space, about 1,000 square feet. It could be divided into two spaces. Then there are six apartments. So there are five two-bedroom apartments, and those two-bedroom apartments will have two floors. So the living area, kitchen, will be on the second floor of the building, and then you walk upstairs into the third level of the building, and that's the bedroom area. So you only access the third floors through the apartments. That's a private space. There's one bedroom, and that's on the third floor, and it's a nice, spacious one bedroom on the corner. The unique piece that I'm hoping will really be a selling point to tenants is each unit has a private rooftop deck that with a built-in pergola. And it's only accessible through the stairway from your apartment to the deck. And we're thinking that at that height, right now there's not much to obstruct the western view. So we're thinking there'll be a mountain view from there. And then there's also a deck available to the commercial tenants as well. So again, another space for building community. And that's a unique feature that is not available, as far as I know, in other apartment companies in Longmont.
And it is lease, right? It's not purchase, it's lease.
That's right. It's the same. Mm-hmm.
And then what do you see like the impacts will be within that kind of area? What do you see as far as what do you hope to see, I should say?
You know, if you take a look at that whole block, and really the block north and the two blocks north and two blocks south, that whole area really could use some TLC. And so we're all looking at this as a catalyst project for just kind of a forerunner. Like, I think it will help other people spruce up their places. Some other development may happen in that area. You know, it's just an area that it just needs some rejuvenation. So this is the beginning of that, and specifically what will happen, boy, I couldn't tell you, but I'm hoping that other beautification things and community building projects will happen in that area as a result of Kasaloo.